Tomorrow, Delta Airlines will offer flights from Atlanta to Havana, Cuba, for the first time in over 50 years. President Obama visited Cuba earlier this year, and he's pushed for the U.S. to normalize relations after decades of separation.
We will end an outdated approach that for decades has failed to advance our interests, and instead, we will begin to normalize relations between our two countries.
But Georgia already has some strong ties to Cuba because we welcomed some of their children. In the early 1960s, 14,000 Cuban kids came to America. One of them was Carmen Bernal, who grew up in Milledgeville, Georgia. She's now a professor of modern and classical languages at Georgia State University, and I spoke with her last July. She shared some of her early memories about Cuba and her journey to Georgia. So when did you get to the U.S.? You were one of the Peter Pan children.
Yes, I am Operation Pedro Pan.
And you were how old when you got here?
I was 13 when I came, and I came on October 4th, 1961.
You obviously remember this really well. Why did your parents let you go? I mean, that must have been a very painful decision for them.
Well, in 1960, many things were changing in Cuba under the regime of Castro. And the parents kind of panicked because there were rumors of an imminent invasion and the children being taken to the fields to cut sugar cane. All of that came true later.
Let me play you a newsreel maybe to take you back in time to that moment, because many people in Cuba viewed Fidel Castro as sort of a conquering hero after the revolution. Take a listen.
Castro rode in glory into Havana. Cubans, hundreds of thousands of them, gave him a hero's welcome. He quickly won international recognition for his government, but later caused widespread concern over his methods.
So your parents, were they were not supporters of Castro?
Yes. They were very, very supportive of Castro. I have here the flag that my mother had in a drawer all the time that Batista was in power, and she got it out on the 1st of January, 1959. Yes. And I wrote at that time. I even wrote in my diary a very detailed account of Castro's coming into Havana.
When you were 13?
When I was 13. I like to write.
So yeah. But they were still afraid of the changes that were coming.
Well, that was 1959. Right. By 1960, things had changed a lot. Everything had been nationalized, all the banks. My school was closed, and the nuns were given only 72 hours to leave. That's what changed my mind.
Many of the Catholic schools were closed. I wanted to play you a comment from Father Brian Walsh. He was with the Miami Diocese, and he was actually the first person that started. You're nodding your head. Did you meet him?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so he was actually the one that signed the visa waivers for these Cuban kids aged 16 and under. Before he died in 2001, Father Walsh spoke with the Florida International University for an oral history project, and he's talking about a call he got from the State Department right before Christmas in 1960. Take a listen.
They had a list of 200 children at the U.S. Embassy in Havana. They were willing to give them visas to come to the United States, provided a non-governmental agency would accept responsibility for them.
So here's another comment, right, that Walsh made. He was asked to do if he himself would sign one of these waiver visas for the kids, and here was his response.
You know, there's no one I can talk to because of the holidays. When do you have to have the answer? And he says, today. So I thought 200 children, save them from communism. It's worth it. So I went out on a limb and agreed to it.
You're saying you remember all of this?
Well, I remember it, and I have read a lot about it. The Reader's Digest had a wonderful article on Monsignor Walsh.
But it went from 200 kids to 14,000.
Exactly. He did not know that at the time.
Yeah. So help me understand how this happened for you. You got word. I assume your parents came and told you you'd be leaving.
Well, actually, the word waiver is a word that I learned a long time after that. It meant no visas. It was just the letter from Father Walsh that would serve as a visa. And these letters were distributed through all the churches in Cuba, not just the Catholic Church.
People were making copies of them.
Yes, and they were being distributed at the churches. So all we needed was a passport and this visa to enter the United States.
Was it your parents that came and said, Carmen, we're sending you to the United States?
Yes, they had been arguing for a few nights they thought I was asleep when they were arguing.
But
I am
weren't.
An only child. My parents were older. It was a very difficult decision for them.
What about you? Were
but
you
the
upset?
Ultimate act of love.
But
courage.
Were you upset? Did
oh,
you?
Oh, no, I was not upset. I was a free spirit. Most of my friends had already left, and I was very excited. This was an adventure to me. There was never any fear instilled in me about leaving. My parents were very calm, very naturally told me to look for a man named George. That was my only indication. That was the only thing they told me to do.
Look and, for someone named
their,
George.
Their trust in the United States was completely unwavering. They delivered me to heaven on that day.
Okay, so you got to the U.S. Did you started out in Miami, I assume. So how
yes.
did you end up in Georgia?
Okay, because I stayed at the camp about 6 months. I was probably the longest Peter Pan child that stayed there. Most of them only stay a week or 2 weeks, and then they were relocated. But I had asked to stay, and I had refused a few places, like Montana, for example. I learned these states by looking at this huge map where the children were being relocated. And then in 6 months, the camp was under the hands of social workers. So one day they discovered me, and they told me that I had to either accept a scholarship in New York or live with a relative. By that time, my uncle, a doctor, had arrived in Miami. And against my mother's wishes, I have to say, I chose to go with my uncle. My mother wanted me to go to New York in that scholarship to a Catholic school. But I guess I chose
Why?
The safest
Do you
way.
Remember?
I was afraid of leaving Miami. I did not know then that I was going to end up in Milledgeville, Georgia. And I thought if I left Miami, I was going to be more away from my parents. And I would never see them again. I had that problem. I wanted to stay there. I felt that if I was in Miami, I was closer.
You wanted to
them.
Keep the ties with
yes,
Cuba.
With my parents,
yeah.
yes. And so he took me out of the camp. And after a year, he was able to pass the board exams and everything. And his first job was in Milledgeville, Georgia, at the state hospital. And that's how we headed north in February of 1963, in a very, very cold day.
Oh, it was cold.
Yes, and gray and gloomy. And I remember seeing the Spanish moss for the first time hanging from the trees. And I imagine myself being entangled in all that, in a gigantic spider web. And these were my feelings as we were heading north.
That sounds scary.
I was not very happy about going to Milledgeville, but Milledgeville was a blessing to me afterwards.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Carmen Bernal. She teaches Spanish at Georgia Perimeter College. Long before that, she was one of the 14,000 Cuban kids who came to the U.S. as part of Operation Peter Pan. Okay, so you got to Milledgeville, and I can't even imagine. Was your English good at this point?
Oh, no, no, no. The first 3 months, I had not studied any English at the camp. On the second 3 months, we had classes, but, you know, I did not know
much. What do you remember? I mean, what a culture shock that must have been.
Yes.
What do you remember as kind of sticking out in your memory as things that were really different?
Well, the first culture shock was in Miami and in the locker room at Shenandoah Junior High. I was not used to changing clothes for PE or anything like that. And also, we were studying Shakespeare in my English class. I remember memorizing without knowing the words. I don't know how I did it. I really don't know how I did it. Anthony's speech of Julius Caesar, that's what we were studying, and I had to write it down. And I knew just a few words, like friends, Romans,
yeah.
countrymen. And so that was difficult. And math and something else and science were manageable at the time.
But, I mean, what about the culture of Georgia where you I assume you couldn't get any kind of food you recognized? People had must
Well,
have...
we had Cuban food at home, remember. I was living in a Cuban home. The main culture shock, it was not a culture shock. It was a blessing. I mean, people really, we were novelties in Milledgeville.
They welcomed you.
The people in Milledgeville had never seen a Cuban before, and there were 70 Cuban families living in Milledgeville.
70?
70 at the time that I arrived. All the time in the 60s and the 70s, there were 70 Cuban doctors.
Were there other Pedro Pan kids?
No. I was the only one who was not the daughter of the doctor, of a doctor.
I wanted to play you this comment, who was talking about all the numbers. I mean, we're talking 14,000 children. Yes. This is George Zamanillo. He's the director of the History Miami Museum. And he's talking about the numbers of Peter Pan kids who became successful.
We have a former senator, Mel Martinez. He's one of Pedro Pan, the mayor of the city of Miami is a Pedro Pan. Many performers and musicians and other successful business people are all Pedro Pans here in the community. It's a great story to tell.
That's not common among people who are refugees, for them to have that large a number of very successful people. And here you are, you're teaching at a university level. I mean, that's success.
I have taught for 34 years in Georgia.
Why do you think this operation in particular was pretty successful?
I don't know. From the time we were little, we were very motivated as far as school was concerned. I mean, there was never the choice of whether you go to college or not after high school. That was different to me. That was very American to have to choose. For us, there was no choice. We were very motivated as far as school was concerned. And I think Monsignor Walsh also did a wonderful job continuing that motivation. He took the place of the parents. And in every message that we got from him, it was important that education was the most important thing. And it became a priority. It was a priority in most of these homes.
Well, but we only have about a minute left, but I have to ask if you did see your parents again.
Yes. Without knowing that it was going to be 4 years, because I came thinking that it was going to be just a short time, I was able to meet my mother in December of 1965.
That was a portion of my interview with Georgia State Professor Carmen Bernal. She's one of the 14,000 Cubans who came to the U.S. as part of Operation Pedro Pan. I spoke with her last July.